Welcome, and thank you for joining us for the NAHU Healthcare Happy Hour, the official podcast of the National Association of Health Underwriters. Before we begin, please take a moment to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or Spotify. The podcast is distributed on these platforms every Friday and is included in the NAHU's weekly member-exclusive health policy newsletter, The Washington Update, giving you a head start on your weekly healthcare happy hour. We apologize for the audio quality on this week's episode of the Healthcare Happy Hour. We are practicing social distancing and recording in our individual homes. Last week, NAHU submitted comments to CMS in response to the contract year 2021 and 2022 Medicare Advantage and Part D proposed rule. The proposed rule dealt with a host of Medicare issues, including lookalike plans, ESRD beneficiaries, training and testing requirements, beneficiary contact, and more. We wrote our comment letter with the informative input from our Medicare Advisory Group and FMO Council. On this week's episode, Craig Ritter, owner of Ritter Insurance Marketing and member of the Medicare FMO Council, joins John Green to review our comments in detail. This proposed rule covers a large range of topics in Medicare Advantage and Part D. Overall, what are some of the biggest changes CMS proposed in this rule?
Well, thanks, Dan, and we appreciate being on this week to present a podcast on Medicare. Before we begin, I just want to tell everyone what our approach was to the rule. The rule is rather lengthy, but there's a lot in there that affects agents directly. And so we broke it up into two parts, issues that affect agents directly, including compensation and other issues that will have long-range impacts on the program, which also allowed us to discuss issues from an agent perspective that we think could make the program function better. And so we're very pleased to go through this comment letter with you. So Craig, what issues did you see that you thought were most impactful?
Yeah, John, and thank you for allowing me to join you on this podcast, and hello to all the agents who are listening. A lot of interesting changes. I think some of the biggest changes had to do with category of traditional MA products, which CMS calls D-SNP lookalikes. Those are dual eligible special need plans, which aren't actually true D-SNP plans, but are traditional MA plans that kind of act like a D-SNP. So some significant changes there. Clearly, including end-stage renal disease patients or ESRD patients is a huge change. Now, prior to this, they were able to be enrolled in a Medicare Advantage plan, but only if they got ESRD subsequent to enrolling in the Medicare Advantage plan. And this also informs some other changes like an increase in maximum out-of-pocket or MOOP for Medicare Advantage plans. There were changes with supplemental benefits, some changes around telehealth, and some relaxation around the rules for network adequacy, which we think will increase the prevalence of Medicare Advantage plans and provide more rural access to HMOs and PPOs. Clearly with, COVID-19, CMS kind of took a buzzsaw to a lot of regulations around telehealth to be able to improve access for Medicare beneficiaries while the healthcare system is, kind of struggling under the weight of coronavirus. But within the proposed rule, they did address some telehealth as well. But I'd say those are the big tickets.
In regards to broker compensation, what is the proposed rule suggesting and what are our concerns?
Yeah, so I think high level, when I think about broker compensation in Medicare Advantage and to I think lesser extent Medicare Part D, you have a number of different controlling forces that impact broker compensation. One is, of course, market pressure, right? There's a free market out there. Plans are able to pay brokers fair value for what they feel is the acquisition cost for a new member. But in Medicare Advantage in particular, and typically, market forces are going to be sufficient to indicate what broker compensation should be. It's a free market. So you have brokers' expertise, and then you have the carrier's desire for business, and those two meet at some point, let the free market decide that. Within the Medicare Advantage space, you also have, legislative pressure as well, or a legislative controlling force, which is the CMS maximum compensation And also, I think to some extent, the MLR or medical loss ratio rules, which is the mandate that the health plans pay at least 85% of the revenue that they receive in medical expense paid historically to providers. And then, of course, there's a regulatory aspect of it, too, which is what CMS is able to control. And, you know, some of those areas would be the issue of proration, where if an agent sold a Medicare Advantage plan mid-year, like in June or July, CMS has regulations around proration of commissions and also around kind of the definition of the MLR as well, which just puts pressure on the health plan's ability to be able to pay broker compensation. The more expenses that have to come out of that 15% of administrative costs, the less room there is for broker compensation. Like, we have not seen that as an issue in the Medicare Advantage space yet, but of course, the more room you have in that 15% for commissions, I think the better it is for agents so that the free market can kind of decide, you know, what the compensation should be. So within this regulation, you know, some changes in the MLR definition, which I think are favorable for our industry. So some of the supplemental benefits are now able to be included in the MLR. Before, CMS dictated that those expenses had to be paid to a provider, and now that's no longer the case. So these supplemental benefits can be paid to non-providers and also be included in MLR. In addition, there's a category of benefits. They're called special supplemental benefits for individuals with chronic illness. And CMS is doing a couple things with regards to this. One, they are expanding. I think there's 15 chronic illnesses, and CMS is going to be expanding the number of chronic illnesses. So it's going to actually apply to more people. In addition, CMS is changing to allow non-primarily health-related benefits to be paid under the MLR. Before, they had to be primarily health-related. Now, CMS did say that there's got to be a reasonable expectation that these benefits would improve or maintain the health of the enrollee. So there is some gatekeeper on what that can be. But CMS gave some examples, you know, things like meals, you know, food and produce, transportation, even if it's non-medical, things like social clubs, things like that had to do with mental health or community-based activities, things like that. So it didn't necessarily have to revolve around a physician, but it could be included in the MLR definition, which I think is helpful.
I've been talking to CMS for over a year regarding this issue because it really doesn't make any sense. If you're born later in the year, you're disadvantaged. If you have a December birthday and you can only get 1/12 of the first year commission for December by waiting in January, you can get the full 12 months. It's really a beneficiary protection. Not clear as to who thought that would be a wise move to make, given that compensation is built into the premium. Referral fees has been a big issue identified by CMS of late. And if you are working for one organization, the referral fees have no impact given that the organization sets the rate of pay. And so there's no steering impact there. There are a number of regulations already on the books that they don't enforce. And so we asked them in the letter to specifically, you know, work with states and enforce their own regulations that already exist on the books if they have a concern relative to referral fees.
I think there's some concern about maybe double payment. So there was a payment to an agent and then a referral fee on top of that, that it would have exceeded the maximum allowable compensation. But I think referral fees are, you know, there's so many layers to referral fees. Like, there's state regulations and there's CMS regulations that maybe CMS is just looking to push it back to the states in terms of taking out some of the language around referral fees.
So in regards to the communications and marketing side of things, what was CMS proposing?
Carriers have been very active in marketing their plans during the AEP, but also outside of the AEP. And this has created a lot of angst among our members. I get calls all the time and emails specifically about various commercial marketing activities. So first, let's just start with the AEP. When a beneficiary selects a plan, we think there should be some sort of toggle to turn off continued advertising or marketing to them through the portal, because it suggests to them that maybe they made a mistake in their selection And it makes them question whether they should be in a zero premium plan instead of paying for a supplemental, when in fact the supplemental was carefully thought out and that was the selection that was made. It just creates confusion in the minds of beneficiaries. And I think that from a carrier perspective, in fairness to them, they are counting on that new Benny as part of their count in their plan. We need a mechanism to turn off marketing through the portal once a selection is made. Outside of that, we know that commercials continue to blare on the television about your selection, and there's no mention made that you should go back to your agent to discuss if, you know, such a plan change would be in their best interest if they have an agent of record.
Yeah, I mean, I think about the annual election period, that's the time for marketing, for, you know, evaluating your existing plan, for looking at the new options and seeing if there's another plan out there that meets your needs. You know, I think that the reintroduction of the OEP, which is time from January 1st through March 31st, where you can make one election change, like an MA, if you have a Medicare Advantage plan, you can switch to another Medicare Advantage plan. I think that was a big benefit and a big win for us to have that included. However, in my mind, it's for fixing issues. Before, there was really no mechanism for agents to be able to fix an issue for a Medicare beneficiary client. So having the OEP has value in that regard, but I think it's sort of morphed into, you know, if you're watching daytime television, it's morphed into basically another enrollment period, another annual enrollment period. So clearly, I think the comments that NEHU made to CMS with respect to putting some reasonable constraints on television advertising and other advertising during the OEP, I think makes tremendous sense. Good for the agents, where it's, you know, basically used as a tool to help beneficiaries who might have an issue with a prescription drug or maybe a provider out of network, you know, something pops up where a change is necessary. But just to create another 3-month AEP, I don't think that's a benefit to agents, and I don't think it's a benefit to the beneficiaries either.
Yeah, we've suggested disclaimer language, such as if you will be turning 65 soon, to make it clear that the advertisement is only intended for people who are newly eligible for Medicare or have a special enrollment right, not for existing beneficiaries.
And I also appreciated NHU's comments around the scope of appointment, using some of the rules around the beneficiary contact provisions to bring up the scope of appointment. And the scope of appointment came up. It's been a number of years. John, do you know? I probably blocked it out of my mind, but do you remember what the date was of when it came about? And certainly times have changed, but
it really had to do with the ramp up to MA rollout, where there weren't sufficient number of agents to handle the volume of people coming in. And in order to gain market share, carriers were ignoring their own protocols for identifying agents who were licensed. And so they did things that would not normally be done by a licensed agent, let's put it that way. But once they required agent of record, those problems vanished. And I've seen the regulations at CMS in the binders, and they've really shrunk considerably. But I really feel like it still has outlived its usefulness now, and really it should be set aside.
Yeah, I think specifically, too, we're saying just to eliminate the scope of appointment and be able to handle it within the coverage application, the enrollment form, instead of having that additional paperwork, just include it in the enrollment form.
Right. I mean, I think that there is some utility in having a scope, but within reason.
The 21st Century Cures Act, passed in 2015, allows end-stage renal disease patients to join a Medicare Advantage plan. So this proposed rule seeks to codify this. What are NEHU's concerns about this?
I think before we get into the concerns relative to adding ESRD, we should really make clear that this is a law and that there's not flexibility to avoid having ESRD. It's a law of the land now, and it mimics the way that private plans work. Now, having said that, there are some concerns.
I think the primary concern that NEHU highlighted in the letter was around what the impact would be on other Medicare beneficiaries. So clearly, it's the law, as John mentioned, it is the law that, you know, we must cover ESRD patients in Medicare Advantage. They're no longer able to exclude them on a voluntary basis from being able to enroll during the annual enrollment period. So, but what are the impacts to the other Medicare beneficiaries that aren't ESRD? Is this going to make Medicare Advantage a worse program for those individuals? And I think Janet's comments were really focused around trying to ensure that non-ESRD Medicare beneficiaries continue to enjoy the benefits of traditional Medicare Advantage plans. One issue that popped up that may surprise agents in 2021 is an increase in the mandatory maximum out-of-pocket, or MOOP. For as long as I can remember, the mandatory MOOP was $6,700, probably a number agency. They may not understand exactly why it's $6,700, but that's the limit for HMOs and in-network out-of-pocket costs for PPOs, and that hasn't changed forever. Now, with the inclusion of ESRD patients in traditional Medicare Advantage, that changed the formula where the mandatory MOOP is now jumping from $6,700 the whole way up to $7,550. So that doesn't necessarily mean that the health plans are required to move their MOOP up to $7,550 for 2021, but it gives them the ability to be able to do it. So it kind of begs the question, like, this inclusion of ESRD, why should that impact the traditional Medicare Advantage enrollees, right? So I think that was the concern, to ensure that there's sufficient funding and that it doesn't negatively impact other Medicare beneficiaries.
In addition to that, what do you think about the change in regard to Part D, giving seniors more choices and lower out-of-pocket costs?
Yeah, CMS did a number of things around prescription drugs. I mean, you know, John, that this is a very, very hot item for the administration. They put out a proposed rule, I think, last year. They got some feedback and they pulled back on some of the items. But a number of different things that they're doing around Part D. So one is they're instituting a sixth tier. So instead of having a five-tier Part D benefit, now there'll be a sixth tier. And the sixth tier is for preferred specialty. So this is going to, you know, in theory, give the health plans or the pharmacy benefit managers, PBMs, the ability to lower the cost on certain specialty drugs by having that specialty tier, which would have a lower out-of-pocket cost. Generally, it's co-insurance and not a copay on the specialty tier. So if they, maybe they could negotiate a copay or lower the percentage of coinsurance on that sixth tier. They're also mandating that the health plans and Part D sponsors develop a real-time pricing tool. Now, this doesn't come about until January of 2022, so it's a little bit off in the distance, but it's still, you know, coming on the horizon here. I think the intent here is for Medicare beneficiaries to be able to work with their physicians when they are prescribing a drug, to be able to go to that pricing tool to see what would the cost of this prescription be, and is there a generic available, and what is the cost of the generic? Just ways for Medicare beneficiaries to work with their physicians to try to lower their prescription drug cost. You know, I think our concern is if there's too much focus on these individual carrier by carrier pricing tools from a plan selection perspective, and not so much focus on the Medicare plan finder. I think, as NAHU members know, there was tremendous work done on behalf of our members to work with CMS to improve Medicare plan finder after that, I don't know, debacle. This may be too strong, but certainly not a smooth rollout of a new Medicare plan finder tool. But NAHU did a tremendous amount of work to help CMS to be able to improve that product for agents, for Medicare beneficiaries, and also for the stateship counselors as well.
Yeah, and that really is in keeping with our line of comments, that we thought that these were great ideas, but that they'd be clearly communicated through the Medicare Plan Finder and other prescription drug pricing information transparency tools, and not as a way to create a bifurcated tool that agents will have to go back and forth in order to enroll people.
There was also mention of pharmacy quality measurements and just having some additional transparency in that regard. I'm not really sure that kind of level of granularity is really something that Medicare beneficiaries are clamoring for, you know, to get those pharmacy quality measures. I mean, maybe if you're picking a Part D plan or you're looking for a new pharmacy, something like that. But I don't think for the most part, it's really something that Medicare beneficiaries are demanding or agents even are demanding to get that kind of level of access to those quality measures.
Craig, let's go back to the telehealth provisions. It seems that they are setting out a course to improve rural access. What are your thoughts?
Yes, as most agents know, and as you know, CMS does have regulations around network adequacy. If you're coming in with a new HMO or PPO product in a particular county, you're mandated to have 90% of your providers, and that's not only just your primary care physicians, but also your specialists. So you might need a cardiologist, you might need a dermatologist, you know, all those specialties within requirements of time and distance. Let's say 90% of the Medicare beneficiaries must have access to the physicians and the specialists within a certain time and distance requirement. So what CMS did in its effort really to promote telehealth, if a health plan does include those telehealth benefits, they get a 10% bonus in the time and distance requirement. And also CMS is lowering the network adequacy rule from 90% to 85%. So now if you have that telehealth benefit included in your Medicare Advantage plan, only 85% of Medicare beneficiaries need to meet the time and distance requirement, and you get a 10% bonus on those time and distance requirements if you include the telehealth. What are the implications for the agent of this? In my opinion, I think we're going to see more Medicare Advantage plans available in rural markets. So where you typically would see strong HMO, PPO products really in your urban areas, in your big cities, and not so much in the more rural markets, I think you're going to see Medicare Advantage plans sprouting up. It may not start in 2021, but I think that's the trend, that you're going to see more Medicare Advantage options in those rural markets. So just creating more opportunities for agents, more product availability for Medicare beneficiaries. So I think it's a really good thing that CMS is relaxing some of those rules around network adequacy.
It is now time for the NAHU Healthcare Happy Hour Toast of the Week. Who are we toasting to this week?
This week, we're toasting to NAHU's launching of the Medicare certification program that will allow you to take a test that's developed by agents for agents with close consultation with our Medicare advisory group and our Medicare FMO council.
Cheers!
Thank you for joining us for the NAHU Healthcare Happy Hour, the official podcast of the National Association of Health Underwriters. For more information on NAHU's government affairs efforts or to become a member, visit NAHU.org.